Blog Talk Radio.
Revolution is the solution. If you work in corporate America, be a revolutionary. If you work in government, be a revolutionary. Gather material, gather information, learn everything you can. If you got a high level of security clearance, you can go in doors that other Negroes can't go in. You go in and see whatever you can see, and then bring it back to your black community so that we can be all that we can really be. Be a revolutionary in whatever you do. This chapter should grow overnight. Every one of you that is not a member should join today. What else do you have to do? You say, well, I'm too old. You're not too old. We need you. We need your wisdom. We need your maturity. You say, I'm too young. We need you. We need your fire. We need your spirit. We need your zeal. You say, well, I'm middle age. I'm not too young. I'm not too old. I say, you're just right.
That's right.
For what needs to be done at this time, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad called the time and what must be done.
Yeah.
The time and what must be done. I want to cover the 10-point program and platform and cover a few things with you. Why is the new Black Panther Party talking about God?
Go ahead.
Some of the original Panthers angry with us because we talk about God. They say ain't no religion in the Black Panther Party. That ain't, you ain't supposed to have no religion. You're a fool.
Right.
We don't want to do nothing where God is not at the center. You will never build a mass movement among black people if you leave God out of your movement.
Right.
It's silly. That's why all kind of lumping activity can crop up. That's why we end up with tons of drugs on top of our heads. Brought in by COINTELPRO, K. Edgar Hoover. That's what I said, K. Edgar Hoover. K. Edgar Hoover and the modern day Hoovers.
And we welcome you again today to the Black Power Truth Hour here, sponsored by the New Black Liberation Militia. I'm your host, Brother Anthony, and I was so glad that you were able to join us here on blogtalkradio.com. We come to you every Thursday here at 6 p.m. Eastern. I personally want to thank Brother Trey for sitting in for me the last couple of weeks. He did a great job. Just wanted to acknowledge him helping us out here over the last couple of weeks. Now, again, the number to reach us here, if you want to join in on the conversation, the number is 516-453-9457. And also, you can listen to us live on the internet, of course. Just go to our page at www.blogtalkradio.com/MBLM. I want to bring in my guest for today. He resides in the state of Minnesota. He is Brother Derek E.C. Collier. And first of all, Brother Collier, thank you for joining us in Black Power.
Black Power, brother. How y'all doing, comrade?
Doing well. Doing very well. You know, we've had various folks on from the organization on to explain their role in it. And first of all, let me see. Tell everyone your title and what brought you to MBLM.
I'm Black Power, brother. I'm Brother Derek E.C. Collier, commander of the Minneapolis, Minnesota region. What brought me to the MBLM, man, was just the whole structure of being behind what Dr. Khalil stood for. And that was my main goal, is being a revolutionary. I actually had an opportunity to meet the doctor. Meet the general, you know, and I was a former member of the New Black Panther Party, and I've seen how things are getting just spiraling out of control, brother, with that whole organization. So, you know, this is what brought me here.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead, brother. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go right ahead.
Oh, go ahead,
brother.
I'm all.
I'm on public transportation. I got a lot of commuting on my way to work.
Oh,
I got a lot of noise. I feel like it's getting kind of stable.
Not a problem. Oh, you know, you talked about your previous time with the new Black Panther Party. What, you know, the way I've always understood with most folks that are in organizations like this, again, you're not, you know, no one really is quote unquote born a revolutionary. It's something that you evolve into. What, you know, what was it? What was the thing or things that triggered you to want to be able to join an organization like this?
Well, my experience as far as my family goes, I've been a part of a revolutionary family, man, since the latter part of the 60s. And my cousin Carl Hampton was a part of the People's Party, too, in Houston. He died in 1970. I was only a baby then, but my mother and my father was involved with the Black Panther Party then in Houston. So this is just, you know, part of my life. I love my people, and I care about them, and this is the reason why I want to be in this organization.
Now, the role you have, you know, now, so you're recruiting other members. You're just, what are just some of the basic things that you do in your line for an MBLM?
Well, my thing is this: how I approach these brothers is, you know, with the history of our people, you know, first, and then I come to them and talk to them about, you know, the movement. I'm very new to this as far as that goes because I've just always been a foot soldier. But, I mean, it's been kind of challenging, but, you know, like I said, I'm going to remain steadfast, brother, and just continue to do what I'm going to do, man, and try to bring these brothers in.
You know, when you see, you know, the climate that we're in right now, you know, we as Black people have always been, in a sense, under siege, you know, for even just from the time that our ancestors were brought over here. But even more so now, even before Trump got into office, this is something that has been going on for years. I think a lot more people are probably more aware of it because of Trump being in the office. But If you had to talk to, say, like a young brother, why he should join this organization, what would you tell him or her?
Well, I would approach a young brother, you know, with the first to learn knowledge of self. And once he gains that knowledge of self, he knows that he has to stand up as a Black man and represent his people to the fullest. We have to educate ourselves. I advocate that a lot. But the thing of it is we need our own platforms as far as education goes because a lot of our things don't get exposed to us in a white curriculum.
And the thing about it is it seems as though we as Black folks have sort of drifted away from that. You know, although I notice now and I've read more about this where you're starting to see a lot more people, you know, doing more homeschooling, doing, you know, really teaching, you know, liberation and teaching more
right
about oneself. Because, like you said, you know, you're not, you know, your enemy is only going to teach you but so much. They're not going to teach you everything. And most importantly, one of the things that they've done over the years is that they've always distorted anything and everything that we've tried to do as a people, and it's up to us to seek that knowledge and want to seek that knowledge.
Right. Right. That's exactly how I feel, brother. You know, my grandfather taught us something a long time ago. You know, and he always would tell us an education of yourself and about who you are and where you're going to be. Is going to determine, you know, what you do for your family, what kind of knowledge you're going to give them, what kind of knowledge can you pass on to continue it to pass on. You know, once somebody gets something, then, hey, man, they got to give it out. Can't just hold on to it. But like I said, I'm fairly new to this, man, but I'm dedicated and I'm ready. I made a few steps, you know, as far as getting some brothers together. as quick as I could because, I mean, you know, I work a different shift than these other guys do. And
sure.
A lot of times it was just miscommunication, you know, between us
mm-hmm.
as far as time constraint, as far as, you know, our schedule. But I'm off during the middle of the week, beginning of the week, in the middle of the week. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I can get out a little bit more now, you know, with the weather, you know, being all right and everything here in Minnesota.
Sure.
Just got to get at these brothers. And I got the other brother, Freddie, man. I trust that brother, man, because the brother's always came to me, you know, and say, hey, man, I'm ready. And now the time has come, and, I mean, the brother stepped up.
Now, being in the area of the country where you're at, do you feel it is a
I'm in the Midwest. I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. Now, do you feel, you know, what are some of the obstacles, I guess, that you have, you know, in that area? I mean, you know, there's been trouble with the police everywhere. No one, you know, there is no state.
Right. Oh, yeah, you know,
West,
yeah, Minnesota's
South.
Had its share.
Exactly.
Yeah, Minnesota's
exactly.
Had, yeah, we just recently had a shooting, you know, where the officers killed his brother, you know, and all the facts really didn't come out, and they didn't want to release the tape, but now they've released
sure.
the videotape of what happened. You know, everybody's seeing what, you know, what happened. It was different versions of what went down. Even one of the city employees that drive the Metro Transit bus, she was one of the actual witnesses to, you know, kind of see what was happening because she was
mm-hmm.
parked right there as they chased the brother.
Exactly.
We haven't actually heard from her since she made that statement that she saw it. I don't know if, you know, the city kind of, you know, got at her or whatever, but, I mean, I know she hadn't been heard from, so I'm kind of gotten with some other brothers to try to see what's going on with that, if they can kind of get in contact with that sister.
And the sad thing is, it's the same routine every time. They don't hold, you know, a shooting happens, there's the backlash, they scandalize the name of the dead person, they,
right.
you know, they put the family through hell, people who witness it, they put them through hell, and then in the long run, nothing winds up happening. Of course, they strategically will put the tape out after everything is gone, knowing that in
right.
a sense, the punishment is already there. And go ahead.
I'm aware, Conrad, of these Gestapo-type tactics. I mean, they use it in Germany. It's the same platform, but it ain't nothing different from what was going on in the 40s, you know. So, but, you know, all of them have the same agenda. They are our open enemy, and we just have to learn how to deal with our situations a little better and educate ourselves more on how to survive out here in these streets, man, because, I mean, it's like you said, it's warfare. This is what this is. You know, I don't know why people think, wake up every day and they just got to see social media and see what's going on just to know what's happening. That shit's happening all over in your neighborhood. But you have to wake up and see your shit on social media. You know, I chastised a brother earlier. I don't know where the situation happened at, but a brother fell out with a seizure or something on one of the trains somewhere in one of these cities. So the white man get up and drag the brother off the train. And his brother, the brother was sitting there filming him, filming the KBs doing this here. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy that people have, you know, I mean, it's bad enough that you know, we are targets. But then you've got these folks out here that literally and figuratively don't even try to do anything. I mean, filming it, I get it, but, you know, you got to go in there and help that man, you know? That's
right.
You know,
you can't let that brother.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, brother. It just kind of disgusts me a little bit, man, to let his brother lay right there and suffer. And his brother is wanting to film this here instead of helping his brother. He just helped the brother and then turn around and get on the KB for even putting his hands on that brother. That man shouldn't have ever even been able to even do that, brother. I don't understand what's going on, man, to where everybody's so fucking afraid. They want to pick up these phones. Pick your fist up. Pick up something.
Yeah.
Defend yourself.
Yeah.
Defend your people.
Because you know, that phone is only temporary. Your life, you know, it's the fact that, you know, people think more. I remember seeing this meme on Facebook, and it showed like a person drowning, and you had all these camera phones around. No one went in there to step in to save the person. Now, yeah, it was a cartoon, it was a satire, but unfortunately, that's become the norm now. And now remember, it's bad enough that we as black men, as black women, are targets, but when we don't even reach out to each other, it's beyond frustrating.
Yeah, it's oh man. It's a hell of a thing, comrade. It is a hell of a thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. Before I let you go, and again, I appreciate you giving us a few minutes, because I know you're on your way to work. What do you want to see happen? What are some of the modest goals you're trying to accomplish in what you're doing with MBLM?
My main goal is this, is to try to do this, brother, try to accomplish this. I want us to control our own neighborhood, and as far as getting enough members to do that nationwide, I mean, that should be the ultimate goal, you know, in my eyesight, because, mm-hmm. I mean, if we're not going to protect each other, then there's no point, man. You know, I don't see anything else besides that. Being at the forefront. Forefront is to solidify these neighborhoods. We have to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because
these neighborhoods
are the starting point. I mean,
exactly.
You should know, like everybody else, they know their neighborhood better than anybody. They should know them better than any damn cop. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's no need for us not to be able to do that.
And the sad trend that I see, and I know it happens here where I'm at, and I'm sure it happens up there in Minnesota. So many, you know, back in the day, at least it seems like the cops lived in the neighborhood, or either were more familiar, like you said, were familiar with the neighborhood. You knew these people, you knew them, as you know, and there was a respect factor there. Now,
right.
in so many instances, you've got so many of these officers, especially these young ones, the ones that are gun happy, the ones that you see on social media so much that are so quick to pull out their piece. They literally and figuratively don't know the neighborhood. And the sad thing is, they don't want to know the neighborhood, and the people who are controlling them don't want them to know. They want them to, they literally and figuratively want to dehumanize them in the way that they treat them. And I think that's also one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing this big divide now between the neighborhoods and the cops.
Right. You know, I had a discussion the other day with an older gentleman. And he kept saying that we need more black cops in the neighborhood. I said, well, brother, I mean, you know, they tried that. They tried that mm-hmm. in the 40s. But the fact of the matter was this. In the 40s, you know, they couldn't arrest nobody. They had to call somebody else in other than black.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
you know, I told him. I said, they tried that.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, we don't need the cops. We are our own cops.
Exactly. Exactly. You have so many of these neighborhoods. There's plenty of places that have neighborhood watches, and they do just as well, maybe even in some instances even better than what the cops would do because there's a familiarity factor more than anything else.
Right.
And I think, to me, that's the one thing that really is lost now. And, I mean, the whole dehumanization and everything, that to me, that is one of the most bothersome things that goes on. But Brother EC, again, I appreciate you taking out a few minutes of your day, because you're on your way to work. I appreciate you, you know, letting us know what's going on down there in Minneapolis, and we'll definitely be in touch, brother.
Yeah. Okay, well, brother, I'll get a chance to get a get to talk to you again, and I'm glad I could get in on this call. I appreciate you, comrades, for, you know, having me on. But like I said, I'm on my way to work right now, so I'll get back with you, brother.
Hey, we appreciate you taking out the time of your day. And as always, Black Power.
All right, BP, Black Power, brother. All right, brother.
Take care now.
All right.
Yeah, brother Derek E.C. Collier out of Minnesota, for our MBLM branch out of Minnesota. Of course, this is the Black Power Truth Hour here on blogtalkradio.com, sponsored by the new Black Liberation Militia. I'm going to get in on the conversation. Again, it's 516-453-9457. Got about a few more minutes left in the show. I believe we have the commander online. Commander, are you there? Okay, we don't have the commander online. We'll hopefully be hearing from him a little bit later. Area code 229, are you there? He was up. Looks like we lost him there. One other thing I wanted to bring up from earlier, this is a story that didn't really get a whole lot of mainstream press, and I'm not surprised. You may have heard that the TV/video organization Netflix had planned to do a documentary on the Reverend Minister Louis Farrakhan, of course, from the Nation of Islam. And, you know, Reverend Minister went even so far as to go to Twitter and, you know, talk up the show. But then suddenly, I believe it was about a day or so before the show was supposed to air, all of a sudden it was ripped. It was taken off the air. You know, without any warning or whatever, Netflix tried to claim that there was a quote unquote miscommunication. But, and even in the press release that the NOI released yesterday, they even said, you know, did they fall prey to outside forces telling them not to put Reverend Minister on? And it's so sad that you see this happening. But see, to me, it should be just another warning to us that we have to tell our own stories. When we allow folks that literally and figuratively care about us, and most importantly, don't care about what we stand in, you can't deal with folks like that. We have to tell our own stories. That's not something that I'm saying. It's something that's been said for years. You know, I have several friends in media that say the same thing. We have to tell our own stories. We have to control the narrative. You can't allow someone who is oppressing you to tell your story. And this should be, you know, again, this should be a warning shot to the nation and to any Black organization that allows people who don't, you know, agree with their ideology, that you should never trust what they want to do. You should never trust them, because they will always come back and sabotage what you do. You have to be able to do that on you. You have to be able to tell your own stories. I would rather be in a small group where everyone is all on the same page than a bigger group that where there is disunity, there's chaos, there's what have you. And to me, this is just another wake-up call that we as Black organizations have to realize. We have to tell our own stories. We have to. And it doesn't matter if you're as big as the Nation of Islam or smaller organizations or what have you. We have to control the narrative on what we say, what we feel, and how we're able to express it. When you allow other folks that aren't like-minded as you and basically ones are willing to sabotage anything and everything you do, this is the kind of thing you have. I would hope that the powers that be for the Nation of Islam will come out and do this documentary themselves, and don't allow Netflix to sabotage this. And if you're a fan, quote unquote fan of Netflix, they're basically telling you what they think of you. It's similar to what the National Football League is telling all of their black fans. They could care less if you get shot in the streets wherever you live. Just as long as you buy our products, watch the games or what have you, we could care less what happens to you. The NFL is basically saying that when they're slandering Colin Kaepernick and others that who follow him like this. This should be a wake up call to all of us that it doesn't matter if you're Louis Farrakhan or just brothers up the street. If they can try to control the narrative, they will. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing what we do, so we can control the narrative and be able to express ourselves in a way so that we are not being controlled and we're not being censored. That's what you see happening. And when you see all of this negativity that goes on, and when the president doesn't get his way, he yells, fake news, fake news. This is what happens. That's why you have to be able to control the narrative. But again, we appreciate you joining us here for the show. We're here every Thursday from 6 p.m. Eastern here on blogtalkradio.com. Again, want to thank Brother Derek E.C. Collier for joining us. Want to thank you for joining us here on blogtalkradio.com. This is the Black Power Truth Hour. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.